Welcome to CCNA 3, Module 1. Okay, we are pre-recording this lecture today due to unforeseen network difficulties at our workplace. Basically, Ventrilo won't work, and I stopped paying for high-speed conferencing. So, let's go with CCNA 3, Module 1. Okay. We are going to talk today about VLSM, or Variable Length Subnet Masks, which if anybody was paying attention last year, you should all already know about because we went through them in the Extension Lab. However, we will revisit them as part of Module 1 before we get into the really complex stuff that makes up Module 2 and onwards, which will be infinitely harder than VLSM. We'll also try and set some extension labs and post those out to the lists so that we can all have a shot at the extension labs and variable length subnet masks. Now, if the world is going well, I have some notes here. Yep, I want Braille Follows Active, which is that one. Alrighty. Companies have to plan out how they're going to roll out TCP/IP. When they're going to subnet their network, they have to decide how many PCs are going to be on the network now, how many PCs are potentially going to be in the network in, say, 3 months' time, 6 months' time, and 12 months' time. So they've got to look at expected growth. The subnetting requirements for an organisation have to take into consideration that your company might only have 4 PCs today, but it might have 15 tomorrow. So they obviously need to make the subnets expandable, otherwise you need to have to resetting all of the subnet masks on all sorts of different devices. I'll just close down Windows Messenger so that it doesn't keep telling me about people signing in. Okie dokie. VLSM stands for Variable Length Subnet Mask. We learnt in CCNA 1 and 2 that you weren't supposed to use the 0 subnet and you weren't supposed to use the subnet with .255 in it. Well, that's no longer true. You can use both those subnets now. This means that for an IP subnet range, say for example of a Class C, 192.168.1.0, which seems to be our favourite example subnet this morning, if you are splitting the range into 64 address subnets, you can actually have 4 of them. 0 to 63, 64 to 127, 128 to 191, yeah, that's right, 192 to 224, what's it, 255? Oh, yeah. Yeah, so there's 64 address subnets. Yeah. Okay, there are only 4 of them, so otherwise it would be 192 to 223 if you're going for 33. Okay. This means that you're going to be able to allocate more subnet addresses out of a general IP address ranges than you would if you weren't allowed to use the bottom and top subnets. Okie dokies, I'll just follow along with my notes so that I don't go and say things before they show up in my notes. Some people are looking at migrating to IPv6, but it's all a bit hard and it's all a bit difficult and we don't really want to do it because the stuff we've already got in here works, and the US government is supposed to go to IPv6 sometime in 2008, I believe. Japan has gone to IPv6. There's some IPv6 in China. However, the migration of IPv6 hasn't been as rapid as one would hope. Okay, networks must be scalable, already covered that. Okay, here are all the things you should be able to do by the end of this module, apparently. Define VLSM, that's more than expand the acronym. And briefly describe the reasons for its use. Alright, the reasons for the use of VLSM is that you're going to have more efficient IP subnet allocation. You can also subnet networks into variable-sized blocks depending on how many PCs need to go on a block. So if you've got a Cavi subnet, you can have zero usable IP addresses on that one. They won't need those. And if you have a staff subnet, you can have a network ops subnet, you can have, 65,536 perfectly working usable IP addresses on their subnet. Seriously, you can actually slice things up in such a way so that you can have 32 IP addresses for people that require 20 IP addresses, and say 510 IP addresses for a subnet that requires 450 PCs on it. Okay, what else should you be able to do? Divide a major network into subnets of different sizes using VLSM. Well, you should already be able to do that, but we'll see. Define router aggregation and summarization as they relate to VLSM. We'll talk about that. They're just funky big words that talk about how the routing protocols can handle different size subnets. Configure a router using VLSM. Identify the key features of RIP version 1 and RIP version 2. Watch the guide dog walk past and wag its tail. Identify the important differences between RIP... I just said that. I must have written that twice. Did I? Oh, and identify the key features and then identify the difference. Configure RIP version 2. Verify and troubleshoot RIP version 2 operation. Configure the fault routes using IP route and IP default-network commands. Explain VLSM and that you can use... Oh, yeah, I did that. It says explain VLSM and say that you can use subnet 0. Right, that's already been done. Okay. In order to implement VLSM, a network administrator must use a routing protocol that is capable of sending subnet information with the routing updates. Why do you think that would be?
Because otherwise
it's classful. And what's wrong with classful?
You can't subnet
a classful address. Okay. So if we have a class A subnet address of 27 dot whatever, what sort of subnets do we have in a class A subnet? 27.0.0.0. That's right, 27.0.0.0/8 or .255.0.0.0 if you really want to say lots of full stops and numbers. Ah, Sue has left the server. Okay, Cisco supports VLSM with open shortest path first. It supports it with ISIS. RIP version 2 and static routing. It's another routing protocol. Okay, you can use different length subnet masks, as in subnetting a subnet. Do we want an example of subnetting a subnet? Well, you're going to get an example anyway. You're going to get an example anyway, because there might be other people... Yeah, other people who aren't here obviously aren't going to be able to get, might not have the same idea that Graham has. And, okay.
I might have the wrong idea.
Yeah, okay, so he might have the wrong idea. Okay, so let's say, for example, you have a subnet of, 192.168. Just kidding. 17. No, that's going to be easier actually. If you have a subnet of 192.168.1.0, and for some reason you have this really big. Actually, you're living at Geraldine's house, and and she's got her and Ray, and she's got her grandparents, which will be moving in. But for some bizarre reason, your parents, okay, not your grandparents. Yeah, but you were saying yesterday you weren't that old, so no, that's right. Okay, so she's got her parents moving in with her, and for some bizarre reason, just for the example, she doesn't actually trust any of these people to behave on her network. I have no idea why not, but she doesn't. So, what she's going to do is figure out how many IP addresses each of the people need. None, apparently. And she's going to allocate those to the people. So, for example, she's going to have her subnet, and she's decided that she needs 16 addresses, because by the time you've got as many gadgets as Geraldine, you need 16 addresses. You've got an M-Power and a Brilliant and an EEP and a couple of laptops and a couple of Macs. Actually, you better have 32 IP addresses now that we come to think of it. Okay, so as her home network is somewhat atypical, her router is set to 192.168.1.1. And she wants a 16 address subnet. So her IP address, so we'll set 192.168.1.0/28, which is from 0 to 15, for things like routers and things. So there'll be a router on 1, and there'll be a power over Ethernet adapter on 2, and there'll be something else that I haven't thought of on 3, and a few more devices. Okay, a code hanger, yes. For her wireless network, yes. And we do not recommend that students utilise code hangers as 2.4 gigahertz aerials. We recommend you use a Milo tin. Now, what would happen, however, is that if she couldn't subnet with these variable length subnet masks, she would have to pick an arbitrary size subnet and allocate the same number of addresses to each person. So, for example, she would allocate all similar size subnets of 16 addresses. We should point out that we probably wouldn't subnet in a network like this, but this is purely for the example. So, she's got 16 addresses, which range from 16 to 31, or 16 to 30, in fact, because 31 is the broadcast for that subnet. Now, Ray's also got a whole pile of computers. For some reason, he keeps going out and buying them. And he's got an IP subnet range from, well, let's say he only needs 8 IP addresses, because he doesn't have as many computers as Geraldine. So he's got subnet addresses that run from 32 to 40. Well, 32 to 39, yes. Well, actually, 33 to 40. Yeah, you're wrong, Graham. Wrong. Shut up, Graham. Yeah. Okay. Helps if we get the right numbers in here. 33 to 40. Thank you, Gemma. Somebody's thinking today. And 41 will be the broadcast for that subnet. Why not? No, it won't. No. 39 will be the... 32 and 7 is 39. 39's the broadcast. Right. Nobody knows what the broadcast is going to be. So what we'll do is, if you're going through this at home, people, get a pegboard and get very confused. Okay, so the broadcast is 39. The network address is 32. His IP addresses are 33, 34, 35, 36, 37, and 38. Okay. The subnet mask is 255.255.255. Let's see if I can get it wrong. 248. Yeah, 248. Because he's got 8 addresses. But Geraldine suddenly decides that it's possible that Ray's going to go out and buy more computers next week. But so she's going to plan for network growth. So she's not going to put her parents on the 40 subnet. She's going to put her parents on the 64 subnet. And they've only got one computer because, well, I don't know, old people usually have one computer. So older people usually only have one computer unless they're Geraldine. So we will go... I just got nudged. For 64, and we'll give them 4 IP addresses. So to give them 4 IP addresses, they've only got one computer, so we'll give them 4 IP addresses. An internet sewing machine, that's a good point, but I don't think they've got one, okay? You just can't get the cotton for them. Now, So 64, and we'll give them 8 IP addresses, so they are going to go from 64 to, let me see, 71, yes, or 7, yeah. Okay, so their broadcast address will be 65. Their first IP address, usable IP address, will be 65. Their broadcast address will be 71. And Geraldine still has lots of IP addresses to assign to the dog kennel.
Yeah, I was going to say I forgot to.
Yeah, okay, so, I mean, we could have another...
She's a geek dog.
She's a geek dog, that's right. So we could have a subnet for the dogs, and we could also allocate IP addresses for things like, you know, water bowls and things like that, if we have, you know, internet-enabled dog water bowls or something. I don't think they exist yet. But one of the things that you have to keep in mind here is that because you're allocating subnet masks with different subnet masks, you've got to figure out what the subnet masks are going to be. You then have to work the numbers out properly, not like us. And you then have to put all that down and document it properly, which we haven't. But so you have to do all those things that we didn't. Now, often what you'll do is you'll have small IP subnets for point-to-point links. And can anybody tell me what the subnet mask on a sensibly subnetted point-to-point link would be? Gemma says 255.255.255.252. And how many usable IP addresses does that give you?
Two.
Yes, Graham's right in this instance. Okay. Because to the first IP address is the network, the next one is usable, the next one is usable, and the next one is the broadcast. Making a subnet any smaller than that would be very silly, because you'd only have a network and a broadcast address. The reason that you need to do it this way is because a lot of these networks need to be advertised with routing protocols. If you are really looking at conserving IP address space, you would actually get the point-to-point links and connect them into Gemma's alarm, which is going off. I wonder what that's all about. Oh, it's recharge.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. I think. So you would have to actually connect those in, and if you were doing it without routing protocols, you would actually proxy up for the PPP link, and then you would actually just allocate one IP address to the PPP interface. Your assignment for next week's lecture is to find out what proxy up is and tell me a bit about it and why you'd use it. It is a filthy hack, but we want to find out why you would use it. Okay. VLSM does not work with RIP version 1, because RIP version 1 doesn't send what? Subnet masks. Is everybody keeping up, by the way, or am I going too fast? Yeah? You're asleep yet, Geraldine?
Yep.
Yeah? Okay, good. Okay, so VLSM does not work with RIP version 1, IGRP, or BGP. Although I think there's a new version of BGP that it can work with, isn't there? Mr. Murray? You're thinking? Okay, because there's BGP for IPv6. Yeah. Okay, well, we'll have to look that up. They may have made some revisions to that, but BGP as you know it, it doesn't work with. Okay, route aggregation, or route aggregation, I should say, is where you should put subnets together. Why would you want to do this? So, Geraldine has decided for some unknown reason that she's going to do route aggregation on her subnet because she's got nothing... more exciting to do on a Sunday afternoon, or at least for this particular one. And she's figured out which bits of the house are close together and which bits are not. So, for example, she wants to make sure that her and Ray's subnets are as far away from each other as possible because they're at opposite ends of the house. He's out in the dog kennel, yes. Well, no, we just use DHCP to reallocate him out there. Okay, so what happens is if you have, say, for example, two departments that have a common cable that runs to a router that talks to both of those departments. And I really don't want to use the examples of the physics and the maths department. BGP version 4 supports VLSM. So there you go. There's a new version of BGP. Yeah, I try to be. Now, so if you've got two things that are close to each other, and you know that the traffic is going to be sent to a router that talks to both of those subnets, you only want to advertise one route that points to both of those networks. Okay, so let's come up with an example, because that's probably easier. Say, for example, we have... we split this building into... and they don't do it this way, okay, but this is just an example. So say, for example, we split this building into a couple of lab subnets, and we also split it into a SAF subnet, but there's actually only one cable running to this building. I have no idea how many cables run to this building, but we'll pretend there's only one. So what they're likely going to do is hand out a subnet that has, say, 512 addresses on it, but they're going to... they're going to make sure that they advertise that route for 512 addresses, and then there's going to be a router on this building that actually handles sending it to the labs and the workstations and things like that. So that's how that works. So say, for example, you've got 32 addresses for a lab, you've got 32 addresses for another lab, you've got 16 addresses for staff. And so that way the router that actually connects this building to the rest of the campus handles all of the subnet routing for all of those, you know, four or five subnets. However, the router that's upstream from that just has a link that a route that points to /23 that gets it to all of the machines in that building. Well, the subnet mask is only relevant to the router that's actually routing the traffic at the particular hop. So as far as the rest of the campus is concerned, there is a network that's /23 that is the 207 building, and then it's up to the 207's building to actually handle the subdivisions of that network. Otherwise, you would have incredible numbers of routes in the routing table. Route aggregation saves an incredible amount of space in the internet routing table. If you didn't have it, the internet would fall over. Yeah, route summarization is in effect. So, for example, if you have the networks 172.16.14.0 and 172.16.15.0 sitting on the same, hanging off the same router, you actually advertise a route for 172.16.14.0/23. So you're only advertising one route to cover both of those IP blocks. And a lot of this is written in your notes, so we encourage you to look at those later so that you don't have to sort of carry it all in your head. Okay, so, and automatic route summarization is in effect. There are some times when you'd like to turn automatic route summarization off, especially if it does the wrong thing, but be aware of what ramifications that will have, and hopefully by the end of CCNA 3 you should know all about that. So, if a router can reach all subnets for a particular route, it only needs to send a supernet route.
So, if your route summarization isn't in effect, does that mean if something goes to... if there's a packet destined to...
No, if route summarization is in effect, the router will automatically look at the networks that it is going to route for and go, I've got 172.16.14 and .15, I will only advertise a /23 subnet. If route summarization is not in effect, it will actually advertise two routes, a 14 route and a 15 route.
Okay, but if it sees a packet that's destined for, say, 172.16.13,
Well, it would do that anyway, because the route's only a slash 23 route. If you have 172.16 dot... No. That's right. It helps to have a pegboard in front of you. So if you've got 172.16.14 and 172.16.15, it's like having 192.168.2 and 192.168.3. Okay, yeah, Gemma's all good. If you're sitting at home and you're suddenly feeling a little stressed and nervous, then I'd encourage you to get your pegboard out, hit pause, and start shuffling pegs around at this point. And that will make you happier, okay? RIP version 1 was only designed as an interior routing protocol. How many times have I said that? Maximum hop count of what? 15. And what's 16 considered? Yeah. Well, that's actually 0 to 15, isn't it?
Yeah, it's
16
hops, 0 to 15.
Yeah, 15's unreachable. Hmm. RIP version 1 has limitations. Here they go, in the bulleted list and everything. It does not send subnet mask information in its updates. It sends updates as broadcasts on 255.255.255.255. What a pain. You do see it in your debug IP RIP. Okay. 255.255.255.255 is a subnet-wide broadcast, and if you forward all broadcasts, you will melt your network down with RIP traffic. So don't forward all broadcasts. It's a silly thing to do. You'll rip it apart. Ha 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 ha. Right. Graham's back. It does not support authentication. I think I misspelled that, because does authentication got a T-H-E in it?
Yes.
Hmm. It looks like authentication.
Yep.
Yeah,
it's got T-H-E.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I didn't think you were allowed to do that. I thought you had to put A-U-T-H-E-N.
Use the contraction.
Not in UEBC, you don't.
No, but UEBC.
No, it's not, but not in UEBC. You've got to make it for stupid people. It is. It is not able to support VLSM or classless inter-domain routing, CIDR. Which is not CIDR. Eloquence would like. CIDR. Apple CIDR?
Well, that's what Windows emulation is.
No, the Windows emulation's Apple CIDR. Ha, 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 ha. No? Ah, the ported version of Wine to Apple is called CIDR. There you go. So you learn something every day. Yeah, Wine does stand for Wine, is not an emulator. You can look that up on www.winehq.org. Because I think www.wine.org might have been registered by some of our students. Now, RIP version 2 supports CIDR. RIP version 2... multicasts to 224.0.0.9. Look at that. Yeah, it is. You can actually turn multicasting on or off, and a lot of routers, that you, like little home routers and stuff, support RIP version 1 in version 2 to give you the illusion that they're actually going to behave as routers and do the right thing, which in fact they're not. But they've got the options in there just to get your hopes up. And what will actually happen is you can actually turn on and off RIP version 2 multicast. So if you turn off the multicast, it sends it to the subnet broadcast, the all network broadcast address of 255.255.255.255. I just like saying that. Rather than 224.0.0.9.
What is the multicast? I don't
actually understand what it is. What is multicast? Hmm. Well, that's a question, isn't it? We'll come back to that in a second. Can anybody tell me what else sends packets to 255.255.255.255?
Radio 2 device.
No. DHCP uses the all ones non-directed broadcast address in its discover packets. So how about that? What is multicast? Okay, broadcast is when you send it to everyone. Multicast is when you actually get a number of machines to listen on a particular IP address, which is in a special range of 224. Whatever to 240. And they all listen on these specific IP addresses with special masks and funny subnet masks like you've never seen them before for traffic to be sent to those multicast addresses. Yeah, it is up to 239. Yeah, that's right. RIP version 2 can use MD5 or clear text authentication. And that'll protect routing updates. I read somewhere the other day that somebody's actually managed to crack MD5, though. I don't think the actual exploit is in the wild, but I think people have managed to crack MD5, just as a historical story, because my lectures wouldn't be, you know... As a hysterical story. Well, I can hand you the headset if you'd like to tell a hysterical story. No. Okay. Historical story is when I generated my first 1024-bit RSA private key, it took my 4.77 megahertz XT 2 hours and 15 minutes. I generated one of those keys the other day just because I was bored, and it took my very fast computer about 15 seconds. So computer power has gone up a bit since the early 90s. So quite an order of magnitude. Which still begs the question, why does Windows keep running slower and slower even though the computers get going faster and faster? Could you imagine if Windows was written in assembler language? It'd be about 160k, it'd fit on a floppy, and it would be blazingly fast. And it's never going to happen. That's all we have today. Believe it or not, I'm at the end of my notes. Yeah. Any questions? Okie dokie. Yeah, I thought you might want me to go back over that again. Okay. Say, for example, we have... We'll pick different numbers in this particular instance. Say, for example, we have the subnets 192.168.6.0. How many machines can we have on that subnet with a 255.255.255.0 subnet? That's right, or 254 minus the network and broadcast, but yeah. Okay, but say, for example, we actually have a subnet that requires 300 machines on it. What would be the sub? What would be the next size subnet up that you'd use to subnet that off? That's right, which is a subnet mask of what? Okay, so say for example we had a subnet that was on 192.168.6.0, and we had 512 IP addresses. We would be using 192.168.6.whatever and 192.168.7.whatever, and the subnet mask would be 255.255.254.0 or /23. The supernet for that would be the 192.168.6.0/23. Well, you see, you're putting... Yeah, that would be the supernet for it. Well, it's actually if you've actually split it into two subnets. So the supernet route for that thing that you've split into two subnets would be 192.168.6.0.
So
1.0. That's right. Okay. So the SuperNet route.
That for any,
yeah.
That your example shows you can do it for any
variable. Yeah, you can do it for any variable length subnet mask. So say, for example, you've got... well, I mean, at home we've got 192.168.24.0. But you've got IP addresses ranging from 96 to 112. Because you're my wife and you actually get a reasonable number of subnets or some reasonable number of IP addresses. Yeah. But, I mean, if I wanted to set that all up as individual subnets and lock all your traffic off on its own subnets and bandwidth limit you to 3K a second because you haven't been nice to me lately. You've been on MSN too late, that's right. We'll subnet and we'll bandwidth limit you to 3K a second. That'll keep you off Facebook as well. So the SuperNet route will still be 192.168.24.0/24, but you have a... Well, what's your subnet if I was going to subnet you off like that? You have 16, don't you? /28, which is a subnet mask of 255.255.255.240. So Gemma needs to practice subnetting. If you're feeling a little unconfident like Gemma is, you need to practice your subnetting, because let me assure you, you will fail CCNA3 if you do not practice your subnetting. That's right. Well, you happen to be here, so you're getting picked on. But they all have to practice their subnetting, and we'll be sending some things out for you to practice your subnetting on. And I think that's all we have. Any other questions? Apart from when will I be signing my next set of autographs and all that sort of thing. Sorry? When's my next tour? Oh, well, I'll let you know. Okay, so that's all we have for today, and if you have any questions, bring them to next week's lecture when we hope our network will work. Okay, so talk to you all next week or on Skype.